Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. I'm glad you're here. I've been thinking a lot about a lot of stuff, and I'm hoping that we can dig deep into this human condition that every single one of us shares. Yet we share it in such a unique way, which I know sounds oxymoronic, but most things in life have double meaning and can exist at multiple levels at the same time. So I hope we can get confused, because it's advantageous to have a shred of confusion to inspire our attention towards insight. Insight being a product of all of our human intuition inside this ancient computer embedded within all of the historical context of our species and our evolutionary backload. We have this immense power within us that could be grossly physiological in the scientific sense of the word, being a brain and a mass of neurons and all of these chemical processes and electrical information being moved around by a bajillion systems and circuits within just your brain. Or it could also be, like I alluded to, some sort of evolutionary factor within the epigenetic code. Maybe there's some sort of back data that's outplaying a new program, to stick to that sort of computer analogy. You know, say something happened to an ancestor, such as being chased by a lion. Doesn't it make sense that we're going to have these instinctual responses? And even though that might be based in some sort of physiological or physical structure, for me, when I begin to even think about these kind of things with how my ancestor could affect me, there's a mystical sense to that, you know, and that starts to lead me on to another place that could reside our humanity, which is for what some would call the spirit. Now, I'm not a very religious man. I'm going to say that on the front here. Even though I like to talk about a lot of hoodoo things, I'm obsessed with spirituality, and I'm obsessed with religious systems. I spend most of my time reading primary text materials, and I like old stuff. I like to tell people that I like to talk to dead people. You know, like, my best friends are 200, 300 years old. I find that I'm closer to thinkers like Nietzsche than to many of those that I have actual close contact with in the quote-unquote real world. But I digress. We were talking about something closer to home. We were talking about our conditions. Science as a whole is a third-person perspective when it comes to looking at this reality, this life, this attempt at making meaning, right? As a scientist, you have to step outside of your subjective being to take empirical data. And if anything, our subject, our opinion is fallible. And so the more disattached we can be from our instrument and from our measuring, the further away we are from that, the idea is that maybe we can get a more clerical output, right? But what I found in all my books and all my readings when it comes to these people who are considered mystics and who have some sort of connection to that outside other, that's that thing that exists outside of me as the little subject, right? So I started out very individualistic. I was a product of my society. You know, I live in the United States of America, and we are hyper-individualized. We seem to have this ethos downloaded into us at birth that says that we can pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, and if we try hard enough with a strong force of will, we can make whatever needs to be, right? And there's also a degree of religiosity in my country, being Christianity, but I had a hard time with my personal personality and psychology to be able to take any sort of outside system of belief, which in my case was Christianity. And so I found myself being very counter-thinking to almost everything. And I spent a long time avoiding and neglecting any sort of conversation on the inside or the outside about this other, about the world on one hand, what's outside of my wishes, what's outside of my desires, what are the things that the world needs or wants. Like, this exists in the other. But here's the catch, and here's the funny part, because going into the other and investigating our relationship and connectivity with the rest of everything, which another word for that could be nature, but we're completely involved in nature. So how can we investigate our connectivity with what we are completely involved with if we can't look at it from a subjective lens? We have to be able to investigate it through our own world, through our own eyes, through our own experience. So when it comes to investigating this spiritual system and the spiritual connectivity that has to do with all the thoughts of all the thinkers, not all the thinkers, you know, but some of the thinkers throughout history, you know, I think that comes with learning about ourself too. So one of the legs that the show The Gingerbread Man stands upon is what I call love. And love starts with self-discovery. Love starts with learning about our subject, looking at all of our perceptions and all the ways and all the tropes that we organize our lives into and that we are inevitably living in, right? So how can we love ourself? How can we wholly accept who we are? And within that, I'm firmly of the opinion that that bleeds out and it gets into our connectivity and it allows us to love others more. And we can be loving to anybody. And this is an unconditioned type of love, really. You know, a conditioned love is needing, it's necessary. It says to the other, to the world, to God, to nature, to whatever that other thing is that you're trying to connect to. I know this is vague and I know this gets confusing, but I appreciate you so much for hanging on with me here. But when it comes to giving fully to another, it starts with being able to give to ourselves. And too often we give up who we are and we scoop out our insides for the other. And that's not how we can connect more, and that's not how we can hear whatever that thing is. Right? The other leg that I stand upon in my show is what I would like to consider creative living, maybe. I guess that's kind of what I've tended towards calling it. You know, but I consider life and our being an artistic act. So how can we be inspiring to ourselves to want to go be creative in our living and in our seeking for meaning? Whatever that is, and it might be drastically different than what mine is, and that doesn't bother me, you know? Even if your belief system is counter to mine, that doesn't bother me. I hope that you find some sort of system to make sense out of what's going on. And that is a creative act, and it makes every single one of us an artist. And I find that beautiful. It makes me want to continue doing it. That's what I'm trying to do here. I want to be helpful. I want you to have more connectivity to yourself and to others around you. And I want you to go be a burst of fire and fireworks in the lives of all of the interactions that you're involved with. So let's get to work. I wanted to start out the show today by discussing Octopolis. So, for a long time, scientists thought that octopuses were solitary creatures, and one of the jokes that would be rampantly told was that if two octopuses met each other, they'd either bone or they'd eat each other. However, certain species of octopus have been found to coexist in colonies of sorts, which shows social structure. And I find that just absolutely amazing. And so you can Google it right now. Just Google Octopolis or Octlantis. I think there's two of them that have been photographed. And you can watch the videos. And, they're not like high rises, it's not a city, but, it's like 10 to 15 of these octopuses just all hanging out. And they pile up these clamshells into these burrows so that they have places to hide because there's abundant food sources. But because the food sources is available, that also means that there's other predators, like probably bigger sharks and things that could eat them. And so they coexist to help defend each other and to live together and to fight, like they fight with one another. It's very interesting. I always like to consider how what makes us human might not be so human. Love and these creative ways to go, capitalize on the environment, even in this situation. Like, it's not just humans. It's this world, really. It's every speck of life reeks of that soul and reeks of that spirit. And I find that captivating. So I wanted to share that with you. I've had a lot going on this week, like always. I always end up having a lot of more negative things, I guess. But the negative, hard struggles that we have in our lives are the easiest to alchemize and transmutate into useful material. If I was comfortable all the time and if I was always happy, I don't think I would be able to have grown as much and to have, like, it's like a callus on the hand. You blister over and over again and you get stronger. Or even like muscle fibers, how we rip our muscles apart and then they regrow stronger. So like I would hazard to say that without difficulty and without the harshness that we sometimes have to imbue into some sort of mental lemonade, like, yeah, anyways. So I'm positively terrified of the hospital. To the point of almost being phobia. I get really bad anxiety attacks. I've had a lot of doctor stuff already, and I'm probably gonna have to have a lot more doctor stuff in the future. I've talked about it on the show before. Towards the beginning of when I first started making the show, I had a surgery, a minor, not a surgery, like a minor treatment that I had to have done on my leg. It was outpatient. Still pretty brutal. But I got through it, but it terrified me for months, and it was super hard for me to carry that tension. And I'm getting back into that again because I'm having more weird medical stuff going on, and it might just be aging stuff. Like, it sounds like it could be really normal, like just kind of man stuff, really. But like going to the doctor, having to have those self-talks and getting there is incredibly stressful, and I've just had a really hard week. And so I wanted to talk about some of the lessons that I think I've learned and some of the ways that I've been able to try to turn this into a learning opportunity. And in all honesty, I had a lot of emotional outbursts and a lot of breakdowns. And I think that's normal. And so if you are an emotional person, if you are susceptible to panic attacks, if you can relate to these things that I'm talking about, I just want you to know that it's human, and I think it's normal for you to have these feelings, even if they're super hard to get through for a little bit, and even if it takes a while for you to reclaim your sanity, it feels like, and even to be able to think straight. everything happens for a purpose, and you are still perfectly human the way you are. I hope you know that. I really do. But one of the things I was thinking about, my first topic here, is going to be control. It's an idea that I've talked about a lot in the show, and I'm consumed with ideas of control, especially in parenting, because parenting is just always these control battles and power struggles between you and your little one. And it can also be seen in the power exchanges at work between people who have pseudo authority over others. And when we have to spend a certain amount of time in this situation with people who may not necessarily be our friends, but may have more authority than us, power and control are always going to be evident. I've talked about power a lot when it comes to Nietzsche and his book, Will to Power, that I've discussed over the last couple of weeks as well. But in this situation, I'm considering control over our lives, you know, because as adults, which most people I feel like talking to now are adults, as adults, most of the time we have almost complete and utter control over what we're doing in our situation. We can even not go to work sometimes. It's really hard to not get your kid, you know, other structures get involved. But like 99.9% of the time, I'm in control of what I eat. I'm in control of when I go to bed, what I watch, what I smoke, you know, when I do this, what I say to you. You know, nobody's compelling me to send this message. Like, I'm in control. But with medical stuff, this is a physical situation where some body part or some biological organism or some inclement has happened where a degree of our control is removed from us. And that can be incredibly stressful. And there's other situations like this, you know. Odin decided to raise concerns at the school where he had a really bad day, and he decided to tell people that I hit him with a belt. And I've never hit him with a belt, ever. But this had CPS involved, where I had to have, you know, the Department of Human Services come in, and I had to have discussions and an interview about my home life. And as a parent, you know, you feel mostly in control of your child until the police are there, right? And then there's a lot of fear that comes with that lack of control. Storms, natural weather. There's a bajillion things that can come into our lives at any moment that can remove our control. And this can be, for at least what I believe, this could be a major trigger in a lot of episodes of various degrees. You know, it could just be one emotional breakdown for 15 minutes. Or it could be 6 months of hell because we broke down, lost our job, broke bridges, and fucked up serious relationships that we needed to maintain just because we had a bad day. So there's like a lot of degrees in how we can respond, because how we respond to a lack of control is very indicative over how it's going to play out in the end, right? So I'm returning to some of my old roots, and I'm rereading one of my favorite philosophers of all time. His name is Marcus Aurelius. He was called the Philosopher King. And I don't know if you've ever seen The Gladiator, the old Gladiator movie. Marcus Aurelius was the king in that movie with the thumb up, thumb down, you know. So, Stoicism is this philosophy that is bound in a lot of different main ideas, really. But one of my favorite that I've been able to draw from it is control-based. And a lot of Stoics will talk about what it is we can control and what it is we cannot, you know? And in Marcus's thought, at least the way I interpreted it, honestly, I feel he would say that what we can control is only our reactions, because we cannot control our body when it comes to physical ailments. Marcus, at the end of his time, was a very sick man, had a lot of difficulties that he had to strive with. And a big part of his philosophy came around maintaining comfort, not comfort, maintaining confidence and contentment, even in discomfort. There we go. Right? So even if we are given a shitty hand, and if we're in pain, or somebody's done us wrong or acted ignorantly toward us, You know, we can still maintain our outlook with practice if we acknowledge what is really within our control, which in this case would purely be just how we respond to what's coming down the universal river, what is given to us by time and change, and how we decide what we're going to be after that. Because it's all just momentary moments. That indivisible moment, though, that never goes away. But still, guess what? My last word's gone. My last sentence is still behind us. So we're still here, but there's still a story and a narrative going at the same time, too. There's two things happening at the same time here. So the next idea, the next lesson that I feel that I've pulled out of this week is trying to think more about this unconscious, because I've had a lot of weird reactions considering my own responses to my own challenges. And I had my typical anxieties at the medical place, and like I had to give blood just 2 days ago at another doctor so they could do blood work. And I'm really bad with needles. And, you know, I've passed out and I've had seizures and I've bled everywhere and I've scared the shit out of the phlebotomist. But still, I've been able to manage my fear better in that situation. But where my outbursts have been the worst have been with my family. And how my family members have responded to my fear. So my fear has always been mishandled, I feel, by my own father. And I don't want to say that in a judgmental fashion. I still think he's a great man. He did the best he could. But when I'm afraid, my dad doesn't want to deal with it. Never has. You know? And so I had to seriously think about why I was responding in such a harsh way that was only tangentially even connected to the actual physical source of my issue, which was my body, right? And I would be able to handle this 4 hour, 5 hour session at the doctor, and then just because my parent didn't say something I wanted to hear, I guess, which yet again isn't realistic, really. So I've been thinking a lot about trying to look at our past, especially when we find a situation where we are triggered and we have a difficult time responding in a controlled and comfortable and constructive, really, way. Maybe we should also think about what has happened in the past to lead to that. And I'm not even trying to say that like it's an easy thing, because it's not. It's really fucking hard. And like, there's so much that's hidden to me about me that I just want to appreciate and really highlight how valiant an effort that is for each and every one of you that is questing inside your own heart to look for who you are. Because that's cavernous. That's an adventure. There's dragons in there. There's metaphorical heroes and wizards. And every archetype and sub-aspect of society exists replicated inside your own being. And a lot of that's dark and it's hard to see. Sometimes it's scary. It's hard to confront and to accept. So I've been thinking a lot about why I've been having weird reactions that are probably based in my past that I still have to think a lot about. And then another lesson I was thinking about is trying to utilize the resources that are available to us in our lives. Too often, we hunker down, you know? So in my situation, I don't have childcare, and so I've been trying to figure out different ways to get my son watched so I can work and pay for everything. And my parents can only help so much, and I've already asked for so much help from many of my friends that it's hard to ask for more help. I feel like a beggar on the street. And finding a new outlet of support is a godsend when it does happen, but it requires the needy, the me-y, whoever out there who needs the help, right? It requires a surrender and a putting down of the ego when we request this assistance. So I was just walking back from my car the other night, and one of the neighbors that has children that my son plays with that I've talked to, for some reason I just felt compelled, and I was like, hey, weird question, what are you doing with your kids for fall break, which is coming up next month? And lo and behold, coincidentally, within 24 hours, I was in need of help, and I didn't have anybody to watch my son, and I hadn't lined anything up, and they were able to help me, right? Utilizing the help that's available, and sometimes the help that's available isn't help, really, but it's still being open-minded and having our ears open and our hearts open to any and everyone around us, and trying to be mindful enough not to bite them because of our pain. Because often when we're needing help, often when we need someone, we're also in pain, and pain projects itself on to other people. It's probably why, you know, my father doesn't want to be around me when I'm freaking out and I'm panicking. It's probably because it causes him pain. And that's understandable and human too, when I think about it that way, right? But it's not a bad thing to go ask for help. And it takes a village to succeed. It's really hard to live alone and isolated. So that's another lesson I learned heavily this week. And I would really like anybody out there who might be struggling with something, maybe your neighbor, seriously, that close, is the answer to a crucial issue, right? Maybe you can give something to them and you can help them. It could be a back and forth here. Like, I find a lot of grace and a lot of peace in that. So, those are the primary things, those three main lessons. Being always analyzing and seeing our responses to control, how we panic in certain situations, looking at control systems, reading philosophy about control. And then looking at our unconscious connections to our responses, how our past memories and feelings lead into further conundrums, and how we can analyze those systems too and try to make a record of it. And lastly, utilizing the help and the resources that are around us. Being able to put down the need to be self-supportive and being an only person for yourself, and being able to be part of something bigger and asking for help from a bigger system. That's hard sometimes. Yeah. And I got to think about these things more for me so that I can figure out how to help me more. But that's what this whole life thing is about. It's about us trying to keep being. It's okay. It's okay to live. It's okay to be who you are and to feel your feelings. And I'm grateful to be here with you. So thank you for listening to my ramble this week. I hope some parts of it are helpful. I hope you can relate to a piece or two. I hope you can constructively do something amazing for yourself this week. You can creatively go paint a bridge. I don't know. But I'm so happy to have this opportunity to sit here and do this with you. So I'll be back next week. Before we go, I want to read a little bit of quotations. Probably from Marcus, and then I'm going to go see if I get Odin to give you a little speck of advice, a little bit of input from an eight-year-old. You know, it's invaluable. They're a lot closer to source than adults are with all of our rational thinking. So, yeah, be right back. So this is the beginning to book two and the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. I don't know how far I'm going to go. Try not to go too far. I get lost sometimes. I really like narrating or dictating. No, narrating. Dictating is when you're telling somebody what to write. Oh, brain. Here we go. Begin the morning by saying to yourself, I shall meet with a busybody, the ungrateful, arrogant, deceitful, envious, unsocial. All these things happen to them by reasons of their ignorance of what is good and evil. But I, who have seen the nature of the good that is beautiful and of the bad that is ugly, and the nature of him who does wrong, that is akin to me, not only of the same blood or seed, but that it participates in the same intelligence and the same portion of the divinity. I can neither be injured by any of them, for no one can fix on me what is ugly, nor can I be angry with my kinsman, nor hate him, for we are made for cooperation, like feet, like hands, like eyelids, like the rows of the upper and lower teeth. To act against one another, then, is contrary to nature, and it is acting against one another to be vexed and to turn away. Whatever this is that I am, it is a little flesh and breath, and the ruling part. Throw away your books. No longer distract yourself. It is not allowed, but as if you now were dying. Despise the flesh. It is blood and breath, but a kind of thing it is, air, and not always the same, but every moment sent out and again sucked in. The third, then, is the ruling part. Consider this. You are an old man. No longer let this be a slave. No longer be pulled by the strings like a puppet to unsocial movements. No longer be either dissatisfied with your present lot or shrink away from the future. All that is from the gods is full of providence. Even that which from chance is not separated from nature or without an interweaving and involution with the things that are ordered by providence. From thence all things flow. And there is also necessity, and that which is for the advantage of the whole universe, and which you are a part. But what the nature of the whole brings is good for every part of nature, and serves to maintain it. Now the universe is preserved, as by the changes of the elements, so by the changes of things compounded of the elements. Let these principles be enough for you. Let them always be fixed opinions. But cast away the thirst after books, that you may not die grumbling, but cheerful, truly, and from your heart thankful to the gods. Yeah, I'm gonna end there. Let's all just keep reading forever. All right. Yeah. Good old Marcus. There's a lot there. Probably is gonna hit different depending on what you're feeling too. So I'm just gonna let that sit. If you'd like to email me and discuss anything that I talked about on the show, or would like to discuss that quote that we just read through, you can email me at thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. I'd love to have a discussion, even if you disagree with me. That would be lovely to have that discourse. So I hope you have a great rest of your week, and I'm so grateful that you decided to give me this half hour. Be loving. To you too, from your friend, the Gingerbread Man.
So guys, it's Asko today.
Please don't move it. You have to talk directly at it, bud.
Okay, hello guys, it's Asko today. I'm sorry I had to say a couple times. I just messed up for 1 second. And
it's okay. We all make mistakes.
Yeah. So I'm crushing.
What are you doing today?
What I'm doing today?
Mm-hmm.
My friend is actually over.
Really?
No, he cannot go on the show.
Yeah. Probably a little weird. You're gonna have like some sort of
permission
slip.
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
Yeah.
That's okay. I like the weekends. This is fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for, you want to give a little piece of advice before we go?
No, not today. I don't have any precise today. I'm sorry.
It's okay. All right.
Bye.
Bye.